morning. It's 9:30. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson with a live reading of the Green Valley News for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. Let's take a look at today's weather. Sun and clouds are mixed, high around 65 degrees, winds out of the southwest at 15 to 25, higher wind gusts are possible. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low around 40 degrees, winds out of the southwest at 10 to 20. And tomorrow, partly cloudy skies during the morning hours, and will become overcast in the afternoon. The high will be near 65, and the winds out of the southwest, imagine that, from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Humidity is currently 27 degrees. Cloud coverage is 31%. No, 1% chance of rain today. If you're out in the sun, be careful because the UV index is at 8, and that's very high. Sunrise this morning, 6:10, and tonight, it's going away at 6:44. Currently 56 degrees in Green Valley. Okay, Mark DeGroft with you. Thanks for joining me this morning. Let's go ahead and get started. Okay, Adelita Grijalva resigned her seat on the Pima County Board of Supervisors yesterday, the same day she announced her bid for the congressional seat that her father has held since 2003. Representative Raul Grijalva died on March 13th of lung cancer at the age of 77 years old. The supervisor voted on Tuesday to set up a process to replace Grijalva on the five-member board. They will accept applications through 5 o'clock p.m. On April 7th and are scheduled to fill the vacancy at their April 15th meeting. The vacancy must be filled by a Democrat to match Grijalva's party. The appointed supervisor seat will be up for special election in 2026, and the winner of that race will serve through 2028. Grijalva's resignation is effective on Friday. Supervisor Steve Christie, whose district includes Green Valley and who is the lone Republican on the board, wished Grijalva well and joked that he would miss arguing with her because I always win the argument. Now it's in quotes. Grijalva became the 28th candidate to announce for the District 7 congressional seat, which includes most of Suarita. The list includes 14 Democrats, 10 Republicans, 2 Libertarians, and 1 each from the Green Party, and no labels. The list of candidates includes Democrat Daniel Hernandez, who served in the State House for 3 terms, ending in 2023, and who lost a bid for Congress in the Democratic primary against Kirsten Engel in 2022. Also on the list is Republican Daniel Gutierrez, who has lost to Grijalva in the November election. Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, who had been weighing a run on the special election, said last week he would not launch a campaign for the seat. Tucson Mayor Regina Romero also announced early she wouldn't seek the seat. Governor Katie Hobbs has called for a July 15th primary in Congressional District 7, where 40% of the voters are registered Democrats, 21% are registered Republicans, the remaining 39% are independent. Each vote or early voting in the primary begins on June 18th. General election is scheduled for September 23rd, with early voting beginning on August 27th. Early ballots will be sent to voters on the active early voter list beginning June 18th. Voters not on the list can request early ballots. Procedures vary in different counties, though. Voting centers and polling places will be set up dependent upon county policies. Congressional District 7 includes part of Pima, Yuma, Maricopa, Santa Cruz, Pinal, and Cochise counties. And you must have been registered to vote by the June 16th deadline. You can check your resignation at servicearizona.com. One word, service, S-E-R-V-I-C-E, arizona.com. In 2023, nearly 11,000 firefighters nationwide were injured in 19,000 crashes on their way to or from emergencies, this according to the National Fire Protection Agency. A few months ago, the Santa Rita District became the first fire agency in the state to use a new tool that could dramatically reduce the chances of firefighters getting hurt in a crash, SRFD Deputy Chief Jason Moore told his governing board last week. Here's an example of how it works. A woman going on a walk in Rancho Suarito called 911 to report seeing a house on fire. And normally, the fire district would send 3 fire engines, 2 ambulances, and a battalion chief, all using lights and sirens, Moore said. But in this instance, the dispatcher in the Valley Emergency Communication Center used new software from a company called Rapid Deploy to help determine what sort of a response was actually needed. The dispatcher sent a link via text to the 911 caller that, once it was clicked on, gave the dispatcher access to the woman's cell phone camera. The dispatcher then had the woman turn her phone toward the fire. Turns out the house fire was a small bag of trash on the front porch that was already burned up and had a garden hose on it, he said. The district ended up just sending one fire engine, the closest one to the scene, with its lights on, and everybody else responded at a slower pace until they were given the all clear to go back to their station. The engine got there, they confirmed what we saw, and so we were able to actually respond in a more appropriate manner. Rapid Deploy latched onto that. They had us write up a case study, and we recently attended the state 911 convention up in Phoenix, and they did a big presentation, Moore said. In addition to talking about Rapid Video, Rapid Deploy also spoke about SRFD's use of another software, this one called Rapid Locate. A couple was hiking up a Madera Canyon when one fell and broke her ankle, according to Moore. They called 911 and the dispatcher hit the button for Rapid Locate. Instead of trying to triangulate and find the general area where they were located, Rapid Locate locked into their cell phone and found their exact location. That location was then shared with SRFD crew cell phones and their iPads. We're almost playing a video game in dispatch when we have one dot, that's the victim. The other dot, that's the responding crews. And on our cool maps, we turn on the trail layer and we can literally walk them step by step. If the victim is going to self-rescue, which is a good idea, sometimes not, we can essentially play connect the dots, according to Moore. In a follow-up interview, Moore said the district is excited about the new tech. Many of their sister agencies can use it too. Since the Emergency Communications Center, which is operated by the Drexel Heights Fire District, dispatchers call for fire agencies in Drexel Heights, Amado, Aravaca, Corona de Tucson, Helmet Peak, and the Tohono O'odham Reservation, they have access to the software as well. More than 28,000 calls were dispatched last year, with the SRFD handling the majority of them. The Santa Rita Fire District isn't the only agency that's excited by this new technology. The Pima County Sheriff's Department has been studying several new tools of late. Some have been purchased, others depend entirely upon funding, still others are far-off dreams. The agency is exploring buying license plate readers, upgraded body cameras that can generate AI reports, and a facial recognition system, said Sergeant Ryan Rohr, who is a 20-year veteran and oversees the department's Central Intelligence Group and is often asked to step into the role of project manager. As the project manager, he helps determine what new technology might be a good fit for the department and oversees pilot projects. Right now, the department is interested in purchasing its own facial recognition software rather than relying on that of the Arizona Department of Public Safety. The software would allow investigators to compare unknown suspects and unidentified victims with jailbooking photos, Rohr said. Homicide victims, crash victims, and people who have died of exposure out in the desert, for example. While some agencies have gone with companies that allow them to use open source materials, such as pictures from Facebook, Rohr said the PCSD wants to limit their searches to booking photos because of legal challenges over open source materials. And once purchased, Rohr said a deputy could take video surveillance footage from a Walgreens robbery and put it in the system for comparison purposes, thus speeding up the investigation for the detectives. Now, if that person has a previous booking photo, whether it's the Arizona Department of Corrections or our system, there is a percentage that comes back of possibility. We don't really call it a hit. It's more of an investigative lead for us, Rohr said. If the system goes, there's a 90% chance that Randy, well, the deputy can go find Randy because he knows where Randy lives, and it's not too far. Hey, Randy, were you at the Walgreens? In his example, the Walgreens photo could also be compared to other crimes in and outside of Pima County for the purposes of comparison. There are quite a few Phoenix agencies that are using it, and so it actually does a search and goes and reaches out to those other agencies as well. Hey, are you looking for this guy? And it'll tell you, hey, we got a Kent crime spree, Rohr said. You get a detective's information, you get a phone number, a case number, agency information. So now our detective could call up to Mason and say, hey, I think we may have a case in common, and now we have something that is more robust that the prosecutors might be more interested in as a result of that. The software could also use game camera footage and other video surveillance footage for comparison purposes as long as the footage is owned by the victim, Rohr said. Amazon-owned Ring changed its policies in January of 2024, now requires law enforcement officers to obtain search warrants before turning over the footage, he said. 10 years ago, such technology was highly suspicious, but Rohr said he believes people are more accepting of it today, as long as law enforcement officers follow the written rules and the procedures about it. 10 more years... Rohr said he believes people will be comfortable with the technology using open source materials for comparison purposes. The software, once it goes through the procurement process and if it's approved by the Board of Supervisors, would cost right around $12,000, he said. And then there's license plates. People are already more comfortable with law enforcement officers using automatic license plate readers to track down suspect vehicles, stolen vehicles, and missing people, according to Rohr. There are two companies offering agencies throughout Pima County in tracking down vehicles, Vigilant and Flock, and he suspects that eventually all of the agencies will end up using both companies. Vigilant has a database of license plate that they take pictures of. As a result, officers can search by complete or partial plates, and based on a particular location, he said, it can help track the same vehicle if it's spotted at multiple locations. The company can even identify vehicles by year, make, and model, as well as by date and time. Flock Safety, on the other hand, sells cameras that can be positioned all over, will alert law enforcement agencies when a license plate that has been entered to the system is spotted. And right now, the problem is the University of Arizona and Oro Valley have agreements with Flock, while DPS, TPD, Marana, and Pima County have agreements with Vigilant, Rohr said. As a result, it's possible to lose a vehicle as it drives in and out of the various jurisdictions because the companies don't share with each other, he said. Flock has offered to do a trial and evaluation period with the Pima County Sheriff's Department so the agency can do a cost-benefit analysis, Rohr said. And then there's AI and cameras. In March, the department ended a trial and evaluation process with the latest Axon body cameras, which can take a law enforcement officer's interview with a witness or suspect and then turn out a report within seconds or mere minutes using artificial intelligence, Rohr said. Now, what we found during our trial period, we found that deputies who did more narration, more communication during the investigation had a better outcome and better success. And not only does the automated report free up the officer to get back out on the street, but it provides prosecutors with a better report to make decisions upon, Rohr said. Axon also has body cams that immediately translate languages in real time. Another product would make the department's rules and regulations available immediately, and a third product categorizes pieces of evidence to make them easier to access, he said. Axon is proposing coming out with a new AI product or a new whiz-bang product about once every quarter, according to Rohr. Deputies will soon have an electronic crash reporting system issued to them as well, Rohr said. TRACS, or TRACS, or Traffic and Criminal Software, allows deputies to write citations and do crash reports electronically. Rohr said the PCSD is also exploring the possibility of creating a vulnerable person registry. A family member of a dementia patient could register their loved one, and if they went missing, the deputies and public information officers would have immediate access to their photograph, information about their condition or conditions. And further down the road, the department would also like to have a real-time crime center, Rohr said. If a major incident happened, a team working in one location would jump in to help in whatever way they could. People could be using automatic license plate readers while investigative support specialists could be conducting background checks, and still others would be using facial recognition. The real-time crime center is listening to the radio, and they're prepared to help the deputies in any way they can. Where does Hank live? Well, Hank lives over there. We think Hank might be headed back to his house. He just robbed the Walgreens. Here's the license plate. Oh, Hank also hangs out with his girlfriend at such and such address. That's where the real-time crime center concept comes into place, Rohr said. During a recent Green Valley Council Board of Representatives meeting, Sheriff Chris Nano said he has lots of wants and needs, but recognizes there are budget restraints. He mentioned many of the tools Rohr discussed, said he's proud of how far the department has come. We're doing some great stuff. I'm amazed at the technology. In 1976, when I started, we took reports, capital pocketbooks, and we'd come to your house, we'd take down all the information. Then we'd drive back to the station, and with a number two pencil, not even pen, we'd write out our police reports, Nano said. Eventually, they moved to manual typewriters, then electric typewriters, and then they began calling in reports to transcriptionists. We've gone from somebody with a number two pencil to being able to just hit a button in the patrol car and having a record in 10 seconds, and the accuracy rate is about 90 to 95%, Nano said. He also said his overriding need is for more deputies, though. He should have 2.6 deputies per 1,000 residents, and he has 1.1 deputies per 1,000 now. It's stressful trying to meet the needs of the community, especially when he recognizes other departments have needs as well. I have to be reasonable because I do have a lot of needs. I have a lot of desires and zoomy things. I want to get that shiny toy, Daniel said, but the reality is I need to be understanding of my board situation as well. 9:48 and change here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. As President Trump takes definitive steps to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education, with the National Education Association predicting dire results, Suarita Unified School District Superintendent Manny Valenzuela is taking a wait-and-see approach. There's so much uncertainty and buzz about these executive orders, and then there's legal questions about how some of these departments, including the Education Department, how they were established and what it would take to remove them. There's so much of that that my focus is to focus on walking slow, steady balance line, avoid knee-jerking any actions in either way, Valenzuela said. The superintendent believes most citizens and elected officials think that education is a critical element for the success of a democratic system of government and to develop the nation's workforce. I believe that those things are common beliefs, that education is a public and an individual good, that everybody should have a shot to achieve the American dream, that children with disabilities or that have socioeconomic challenges should have the support that they need so that they can access the American dream and be successful. I believe that as long as we hang on to that, I'm hopeful that, yeah, it's all going to work out, Valenzuela said. March 20th, Trump signed an executive order stating the Education Secretary will take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education and return authority over education to the states and local communities. Legal experts have said the department can't be completely dismantled without an act of Congress. Trump's move to put Becky Pringle, president of the National Education Association, on alert. If successful, Trump's continued actions will hurt all students by sending class sizes soaring, cutting job training programs, making higher education more expensive and out of reach for middle-class families, take away special education services for students with disabilities, and gutting student civil rights protections, she said on CNN last week. The department was created under President Carter back in 1979, and its purpose is to distribute grants and loans to college students and to provide funding to K-12 through 12 schools for low-income and disabled students. The department is also responsible for enforcing anti-discrimination laws. Trump has justified his actions by saying that the department has failed students, parents, and teachers by spending trillions of dollars without seeing any improvements in student scores. A fact sheet distributed by the White House said that thanks to the president's executive order, taxpayers will no longer be burdened with tens of millions of billions of dollars wasted on progressive social experiments and obsolete programs. The fact sheet accused the department of wasting money on, quote, entrenching radical ideologies, end quote, and expanding the definition of sex discrimination to include gender identity. The fact sheet accused the department of wasting money on, Detractors, however, said that the states, along with local school boards, are already responsible for curricula, textbooks, and the hiring of teachers. Many have said that aside from trying to rid schools of woke ideas, Republicans want to dismantle the department because of its ties to teachers' unions, which they say tend to be made up for Democrats. Valenzuela said it does no good to point fingers at any entity for poorly performing schools. I think it's more about looking internally at the things we agree on, that we need to continue to raise student achievement, and that we need to support and accept personal responsibility for prepping our students for this rapidly changing world, Valenzuela said. He said SUSD has never received diversity, equity, or inclusion-related complaints. We have like 50 clubs, and where we might have one that is focused on supporting students and support for LGBTQ students, on the same campus, we also have a chapter of Fellowship of Christian Athletes. So it's about finding a fit for everyone, he said. Valenzuela is concerned that there appears to be an erosion of trust when it comes to schools that has resulted in public education being treated as a commodity. Now everybody can take a voucher and do whatever they want with it. And what it does is it creates a situation where, as that happens, there's been a shift in the makeup of our schools. As some people leave, some people come in, the operational efficiencies of our schools and the ability to grow, according to Valenzuela. As far as concerns over funding, Valenzuela said the Department of Education accounts for 10% of the overall K-12 funding pie. 953, Pima County Jail officials said clerical errors led to the mistaken release of two inmates in separate incidents over 2 days. Both are nonviolent offenders. One remains on the loose. In the first incident, Dimitri Lopez, 24 years old, appeared at the Pima County Adult Detention Center window for processing at 11:48 p.m. on March 27th. Pretrial services authorized his release. But less than 50 minutes later, it realized it had made an error. Lopez was found at 2:34 a.m. March 30th, was booked back into the facility, where he still remains in custody. On March 28th, at about 5 o'clock p.m., 27-year-old Cristian Barrionuevo was released from the jail instead of being placed under the supervision of his parole officer following a theft-related arrest. He remains at large, and anybody with information on his whereabouts is urged to call 911. Okay, here's an article from back on March 29th. Let's read part of this. It's, what's your lasting impression of the COVID-19 pandemic? The Green Valley News and Sun staff asked the community, how do you remember the COVID-19 pandemic? What are your lasting impressions? What's changed and what has stayed the same? Kathy Jacoby said, I wish people believed more in science. I'm a big believer in science and vaccinations, and I think that the government, especially the current administration, is just all about dividing people, and he definitely did not help with COVID. He really, really went the other way with that, in fact. Thomas Sassnett writes, I think probably the most lasting is the reliance on family. We got sheltered. I work from home anyway, so it wasn't a huge change in that regard, but having the kids home all year and dealing with homework and class times and buying desks and all that stuff was interesting, and all the outings. We go hiking and four-wheeling, stuff like that, because we could get outside and be with ourselves. And Carol Yarborough writes, in the beginning, I listened to everybody who was telling me what I should do to avoid it, which so far I have. I watched Cuomo in New York, and I thought he was very good at letting people know exactly what was going on. And during that time, we worked, but we worked from home. I think we did the best we could under the circumstances. Again, Carol Yarborough. And Mary Frances Donlinger writes, I think it was really complicated. We didn't know very much, so we were listening to everyone and everything, and I guess we did the best we could do. What was disconcerting for me was how divisive we became for the community and how people's beliefs were so strong, including my own, that it really seemed to cause a divide. And Kim Chambers writes, crazy times. I think it changed the trajectory for a lot of the younger generation. I think they became a lot more, not antisocial, but they relied on social media a lot and they didn't get personal contact. For my generation, I'm Generation X, I took it seriously. I did all the things and it was eye-opening. I don't want it to happen again. I think our government handled it as well as they could with all the unknowns of what a pandemic could be. And Wilson Kniezel writes, originally I guess there was optimism that it would go away, but I guess now it's become just a part of society. I think people should try to get the vaccine, try to avoid catching, spreading it if they can. It's a shame, but I guess here we are. 9:57, a quick look, real quick look at the police log for the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Received a call from a man who was suspicious because a person who had wired him $3,000 was now asking him to wire it back to a different account from a phone number that he didn't recognize. That was on March 21st. Also March 21st, a Green Valley resident informed the Sheriff's Department that someone opened a Verizon account in their name. A Caterpillar employee called the Sheriff's Department because they wanted deputies to test a white substance that they found in a baggie. The suspicious substance was disposed of. And the Sheriff's Department received a call from a motorist who picked up a woman near South Delgado and East Juarita Roads who was bleeding from the legs. The motorist wasn't sure if she was involved in a crash or had been beaten. A detective had been assigned to investigate that. March 22nd, a woman called the Sheriff's Department at 10:30 in the morning to report an elderly man was throwing items at her. And other protesters gathered at West Ends Barranza Boulevard and North La Cañada Drive. At 2:30 p.m., she called back to say the man threatened to hunt down and kill them. Detective had been assigned to investigate. And the Sheriff's Department received a call about people dumpster diving at various businesses in La Cañada. A South Paseo Madera resident called the Sheriff's Department to report that somebody stole her keys. And a Green Valley resident called the Sheriff's Department to report someone had alleged that caregivers were restricting his access to even food and water, not allowing him to leave his bed. And the Sheriff's Department received a call from a man who said he suspected that one of the employees had stolen a Buick LaCrosse from his lot in South Mission Road. Deputies determined that no crime took place. And that, my friends, will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News for today. Thank you for listening. Mark DeGroff with you. Reminding you that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Just left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then under Programming, click on Demand. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or any other smart home device. I thank you so much for listening. Have yourself a wonderful day. If you're outside, take water with you. See you next Wednesday. This little woman.